This is Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman, and tonight's show is devoted to tracking presidential interest in UFOs and presidential involvement, perhaps even in the cover-up of UFOs. My special guest tonight is Grant Cameron, a historian who specializes in this sort of thing and has been to 25 or more than 25 archives, presidential archives all over the nation. He himself is from Canada, and he'll tell you an interesting story about how to involve with this. Before I go to Grant, though, I'd like to give out our toll-free number, which is 888-429-5741. That's in the United States and Canada, toll-free, 888-429-5741. Holding a news conference tomorrow to basically warn people who believe in the kinds of subjects that we talk about on the show all the time, namely survival and preparedness. Some of these people might even think of themselves or be labeled as doomsayers, but on a very positive note, but realistic one too, there was this poll that was commissioned, I've mentioned it before, by the Reuters news agency, and the results of this poll were positively astounding. Reuters found that 10% of the world population actually believes that the world is going to end on December 21st, which is less than 5 months from now, 2012, because of the presumed to be it's the end date on the Mayan calendar, but a lot of people have misinterpreted it as being the end of the world. And one of the reasons that we're holding this news conference tomorrow is to draw attention there are some misguided individuals out there who might use this as an opportunity to attempt suicide, believe it or not, in order to deal with or escape this doomsday scenario. Now, this is something that we're totally against and want to put people on the right track and point out to them that it's not the end of the world at all. The Mayans don't believe it. I don't believe it. I've said this repeatedly since we began Radio Doomsday Live, maybe about two and a half months ago, we began the show. But people really should use their time wisely. People who believe that we may, in fact, be living in the end times, but that doesn't mean that the world comes to an end on December 21st. In fact, that doesn't mean that the world comes to an end in 2013 or 2014 and 2015. Nobody knows exactly what the condition of the Earth is going to be, but we do look around and we see it is deteriorating. The best thing that people could do is to use their time wisely and to gather food, survival food, and water supplies, and if possible, if they live in the United States or wherever they may live, to move inland if that's in the cards, if they can financially manage that. Because there most likely will be some coastal flooding that could be significant. So people need to prepare themselves in this manner, both physically and psychologically. And joining me at tomorrow's news conference here in New York City at the Edgar Cayce ARE Center will be Jack Rosen, the chairman of the board of the Edgar Cayce Center here in New York, as well as Alan Steinfeld, and most importantly, Jane Dougherty. Jane Dougherty is a psychic, and she's one of the Crystal Skull Guardians. I met her at the Legend of the 13 Crystal Skulls event, where I also met four of the leading Mayan elders. I want to tell you what one of them told me. Hunbach Men, the Mayan solar priest, said to me that he's concerned about Planet X, which the Mayans very much believe in, Planet X or Nibiru, legendary planet that swings around in the direction of Earth every 3,600 years. I believe it. I was friends with Zechariah Sitchin, who popularized this subject of Planet X, and there have been all kinds of announcements through the years by the government, even though the government and NASA particularly presently denies the existence of the planet. And I'm convinced that they're concerned about a panic, and that's the reason why they do it, and they also want to exercise control over the population. The Mayan elders also believe that a pole shift is likely every 24,000 years, which generally brings us to this time period. I don't think we have to worry about a pole shift. For sure, it would be the worst-case scenario, and according to Hunbos men, the Mayan elder, the solar priest, many, many people, millions of people could perish in such a case. But I think the window, since it is every 24,000 years, I think the window of that, the possibility of that happening in our lifetime or in the immediate years to come is quite remote. But something that we all have to be concerned about is what's going on with the sun. I recommend that you check out some of the video and some of the pictures of activity on the sun, particularly the solar flares. Solar flares normally go away from the Earth, but lately they've been coming more toward the Earth. And these solar flares are powerful enough, frankly, to incinerate us, but they're not. We don't have to worry about that. But we do have to be concerned about the power grid. If the power grid goes down, which is something that NASA scientists themselves have warned about, this could be an enormous setback for humanity. The power grid is responsible for all communications and transportation. Everything works on computers and telephone. Cell phones would be out, and this would be a situation that is likely to continue for some weeks or months or perhaps even years. Certainly the results would stand for years. What it means is if you go to the supermarket, suddenly within less than a day, maybe a half a day, you probably won't be able to get any food. You won't be able to get any water because even at home or in your apartment, the water electricity is used to deliver water into people's homes and apartments. So these are some of the things that we need to be aware of. Now, I also want to mention that Jane Dougherty, the psychic, will be with me at tomorrow's news conference, is one of the leading people who are going to be on board this this very unusual cruise that's taking place. That's going to be leaving Fort Lauderdale toward the end of December and going to Mexico and then coming back to Fort Lauderdale just a matter of days before the December 21st end date of the Mayan calendar. Frank Joseph, who was my guest a week or two ago, will be one of the people on the cruise. Of course, he's written 15 books on the subject of Atlantis, and also a Mexican artist who has in his possession 9 ancient crystal skulls. Will be on board that ship as well. If you're interested in finding out more about that event, I suggest you get in touch with Oracle, O-R-A-C-L-E, Stone Productions. Ken Morgan has been doing a great job with organizing this cruise. Now I'd like to segue into an interview with my guest, Grant Cameron. Grant, welcome to Radio Doomsday Live.
Well, thanks for having me on, Michael.
I would like to find out, of all of the, you've been doing this now for quite some time. You have a great website, which is presidentialufo.com, which I recommend people go to. Is there a smoking gun at this point? What would you say might come closest to a smoking gun in your based on your research?
You're talking in terms of what the presidents might have said or done?
Yes, Anything along those lines.
Okay, I would just pop into my mind two items. One is the statement by Steven Spielberg, which I think he made last year. I had it on my website for a number of years that this is a story that Jamie Chandra had told after talking to Steven Spielberg. They were doing a film in Japan, and Spielberg had told the story that during the screening of E.T. in December of 1982, he'd gone to the White House to screen E.T. the Extraterrestrial for President Reagan and his wife. Near the end of the movie, Reagan leaned over and said to him, "I bet you there aren't six people in this room know how true this whole thing is." That was on my website for a number of years. We tried to get Spielberg or his publicist to comment on it. We could never get a comment. And then last year, someone asked him about it during an interview, and he did confirm. He stated that when he was there, at the end of the film, Ronald Reagan stood up and said, "Thanks for bringing E.T. to the White House, and we really enjoyed it." And what you might not know is that a number of people in this room know that everything that on that screen is absolutely true. So that was the one where Reagan basically confirmed. And Reagan said Spielberg, when he told the story, said that Reagan said it without a smile on his face. So that's the one where Reagan basically confirms that this is all for real. The other one is just a recent event that I found very significant. Some people may not find it so significant. That's when Barack Obama, usually presidents don't talk about UFOs. Bill Clinton, who you worked on and who I worked on, he and Hillary talked about UFOs and Martians and stuff like this, I think 27 times during speeches. But presidents, all their speeches are written for them, and almost never is anything like this talked about. And Barack Obama had just done one, and when I wrote the article, I said, I called it, "Did Barack Obama Fumble the UFO Cover-Up?" And that was when he went to Roswell, New Mexico. He says, you know, when I arrived there at the helicopter, I said, you know, "I came in peace," which comes from a 1951 UFO movie, that line. And then he says, he tells this story, and this is the joke that's written into the beginning of the speech. He says, you know, "I get more questions from 9 and 10-year-old kids about, Mr. President, what about Roswell? Is it real? Is there truth to this?" And he said, you know, I usually tell the kids, you know, "If I ever to tell you, I'd have to kill you." And then he says, "Well, you can see their eyes get all big," and this is the joke. And then he sort of segues, and there's a pause, and then he says, "We'll keep our secrets on Roswell." So this is the, and then the president, I mean, it's a very, you could tell it wasn't written into the speech, and it made me change my opinion. I've always had the opinion that some presidents knew and some presidents didn't know. As soon as I heard that, and I put it together with this latest Chase Brannon story that had come out about the CIA, I now firmly believe that all the presidents know, that they are briefed, and it's just simply classified material, that they simply can lie about it, they can't talk about it, and they have to cover it up. If Barack Obama, who a lot of people consider to be like almost like a socialist, you know, a real left-wing president, if he knows what's going on, then all the presidents knew.
Yeah. But also, didn't Barack Obama, didn't he have a conversation with Will, the actor Will Smith's son, and was asked about Roswell?
Yeah, that was a story Will Smith told to the BBC. He went to the BBC and he said that his son had asked him the night before. He said his son believes in conspiracies and UFOs and all sorts of stuff. And the night before, Will Smith's son, Jaden, had said to his father, he said, "When I get to the White House, I want to ask the president about the aliens." And Will Smith had said, no, don't, you're not going to do that. You're not asking the president about the aliens." And so they went to the situation room. They had the tour, and Barack was running the tour. And they get to the very sensitive situation room, and Jaden looks over at his father, and he says, "Dad, what's my punishment?" And he's trying to calm him down, and he says, "Mr. President." And as soon as Will Smith hears this, he says, "Oh, Barack, hang on." He's trying to stop his son from asking the question. And he said, Barack stopped the conversation, and he said, just to show that he was the president and he understood what was going on, he just pointed at Jaden, and he said, "You want to know about the aliens?" And he said, "I can neither confirm nor deny that extraterrestrials exist, but if there had been a top-secret meeting, and if it had taken place, it would have taken place right in this room here." And the kid freaked out, Jaden freaked out. I told you, Dad, there was aliens. And whether this is a joke or not, sort of is irrelevant, because presidents generally don't, because these kind of things can come back to haunt you, because the president is on sort of record for everything, and every little word in the speech and every little thing is parsed by major media. Yeah. So if you were to bring this thing up, you never know when suddenly the Washington Post or New York Times is going to pick up on it and suddenly press you on the issue, and then it's all out. And if it is, as was described in 1950, the most highly classified subject in the United States, it's a subject that you really don't want to touch unless you are trying to sort of generally leak this. And I tend to think that Barack is doing this because he's brought up UFOs on a number of occasions, and he really doesn't have to bring it up. It's almost like as if he's sort of baiting people, just giving them an indication that he's against the cover up, and he's dropping little hints to give us an idea that there is some truth to this whole thing.
My listeners might be wondering, why are we talking so much about UFOs? And I've had a lot of guests on my program on UFOs, including Antonio Guinness, one of the editors of Open Minds, which is a really good UFO magazine that's out there in the market. The reason that we talk about UFOs is a lot of people feel that there's a connection between extraterrestrials and a possible landing relatively in the near future that could be connected to that end date, 2012, or at least that the Mayans, they very much believe that their space brothers or beings that had come down here originally will be returning at this particular time. I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know, and I just gave a lecture in two lectures in England where I sort of discussed this whole thing. The UFO phenomena is a very recent phenomena. People can sort of point to little things back in the past. But the UFO phenomena basically started World War II, the modern UFO phenomena. Before then, and I've checked like on presidents, I've only found before Roosevelt, I've only found two incidents where UFOs are related to presidents. Once you get to Roosevelt, Truman, on through, it just sort of exponentially increases that there's definitely something happened. And when I was in England, I linked this to what I'm stating now is going on is that the atomic weapons is what started this whole thing, that it alerted the universe that something was definitely wrong, that the kids had found the matches, they appeared, and that I've been in this field for 37 years, and I know that what goes on now didn't go on 37 years ago, that the phenomena is changing. It's not the same old UFOs that fly around. For example, from 1947 to 1952, there was no interaction between aliens and humans. Before 1961, there was no abductions. Before 1967, there was no cattle mutilations. Before 1982, there was no complex crop circles. And it's almost as if the aliens are turning the pages of a book, and we're being led through some sort of development as to what's going to happen. I can't predict what's going to happen, but it's definitely not the same phenomena. That the phenomena keeps changing, and they are leading us through this. And it ties in very much into nuclear weapons. And I gave examples in England to this whole effect. And one was my first sighting happened in May of 1975, which is only weeks after the end of the Vietnam War. And I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is right in the middle of the country. It's 65 miles from the American border, north of the American border, and it's also 65 miles from all the Minuteman III missile silos in North Dakota. It's the biggest arrangement of Minuteman III missile silos, and there was the only operational anti-ballistic missile unit in the United States was operational in 1975 from February till November, and that's exactly when all the sightings took place that I got involved in north of the border. And if you look at the Rendlesham Forest incident, which is a very famous UFO incident, in December of 1980, you'll see that at that very point they had nuclear weapons, which they stated they didn't have in Britain. The Americans didn't have them there. You will see that at that very point of time, the Polish country had started to fall. The Soviet Union had started to collapse, and the first country was Poland that had gone under. And the Russians, in December of 1980, when the whole nuclear weapon, the UFOs of the nuclear weapons at Rendlesham Forest happened, the Russians had moved their tanks to the border, and they had were trying to make the decision: would they retake Poland? So the UFO phenomenon is a phenomena, but it's very complex, and it has to deal with a development that's taking place in the world. And it started in about 1946, 1947, and it's continued on, and the pattern is changing, and something is happening. And we can't really tell. It's just got to do with UFOs.
Grant, you mentioned nuclear weapon storage areas, or at least the nuclear part of it, that UFOs have made visitations this really raises the question of something that I've brought up before on the show, of the involvement of both President Clinton and his wife Hillary Clinton, where they were briefed by personally briefed at his ranch in Wyoming by the late billionaire philanthropist Lawrence Rockefeller. And I had something to do with breaking the story actually in advance of that meeting. I had some inside information, and I put it out, and it was in the New York Daily News, where Rockefeller was planning on making a large donation to Bill Clinton's reelection campaign. So in effect, he had a captive audience, and he had them there for a week on vacation. And he gave them both copies of a briefing document that at the time was secret, and was released to about 1,000 movers and shakers on the world stage. And that briefing document contained many documents that were gathered under the Freedom of Information Act, which, of course, you're very knowledgeable about FOIA, because that's where you've been able to pry some of your documents loose, having to do with the various presidents. The next morning, and we have this directly from Rockefeller himself, he's no longer around, but Rockefeller said that the next morning he was up early with Hillary, Bill was still in bed, on the ranch, and Hillary told Rockefeller, please do not bring this subject up again. And then later, when Rockefeller spoke to Bill Clinton said, that essentially that this subject was, not good politically, that it was political quicksand, and that for that reason he really wasn't prepared to get involved with it, even though ironically he had a great interest in Roswell, which we know from his prior statements, and in fact had told Webster Hubble, his golfing buddy, who later became for very briefly an assistant attorney general under Janet Reno, and he was told, when you get to the Justice Department, Bill Clinton told Webster Hubble, there are two things I want you to investigate. Number one, who killed John F. Kennedy, who was his hero, and number two, the truth about UFOs. Now, this briefing document contained documents about UFO visitations to nuclear weapon storage areas, and it also contained other information about UFOs and their encounters with commercial aircraft. So there are national security implications here, and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, even though Rockefeller tried to engineer a release of information, particularly having to do with Roswell, have, just walked away from this, and the media has absolutely refused to publish any kind of a story or to cover any kind of a story involving this. And, of course, this has already happened years and years and years ago. But, my God, I mean, she's Secretary of State right now and certainly has a responsibility to deal with this, whether she likes it or not, whether it's politically popular or not. I'm wondering how you feel about that.
Well, I think what it comes down to, and I'm only guessing at this, I think that the major media is basically controlled, that they can kill a story. I know when the Clintons first left office, they have 5 years to use their papers, and then the papers become open to FOIA material. So I knew that the Clinton material would become public in January of 1996. And the way FOIA works is first come, first serve. So I filed 100 Freedom of Information Act requests with the Clinton Library the day that the material became public. So I was very, very much in front of the line, in front of everybody else, big news organizations and stuff like this. Of the first 19 FOIAs released, 11 of them dealt with UFOs. So all the major news media, it was Fox, Associated Press, Washington Post, all picked up on this story. Why was all this UFO stuff the first stuff to come out? Because if you can recall, that was when Hillary was starting to run for president. So they were curious, like, why is the Hillary stuff not coming out? Because she's running for president. And they didn't realize. So I got a lot of phone calls. In fact, I talked to the Washington Post for an hour and a quarter, two different phone calls, and they were very interested. And I pointed out to all these three major news outlets the fact that there are two documents in the Clinton material that had been released that showed quite clearly that Hillary Clinton had, number one, helped edit a UFO document for Rockefeller on UFO disclosure. And I said I'd provide them with the document, which I did, all three agencies. And the second part was there was a letter written by Rockefeller to the science advisor for Clinton, Dr. Gibbons. And in that letter, he says everything that's coming from me going to you and everything going from the science advisor back to Rockefeller is going through Hillary's office. So Hillary was at the front and center of this whole UFO disclosure thing that Rockefeller was involved with. Rockefeller actually went to her office after the first briefing when they talked to the science advisor. So she was heavily involved. She was running for president. Now you would think, well, she's running for president. Here's a major story that deals with UFOs and clearly shows documents that have been classified by the American government showing that she had this involvement in UFO disclosure, and they would not touch the story. The Washington Post did a little thing in the middle section, the little thing about UFOs and coming out of the Clinton administration or whatever, but they completely ignored the Hillary story. So I think it's more that the media just will not touch this kind of story.
Well, Grant, I agree with you. As a matter of fact, I recall that I held a news conference in New York in which we were talking about some of these issues with the Clintons and the Rockefeller Initiative and the various documents. And there was a well-known reporter from the Associated Press. And as you know, if you had to pick one news organization that's the most important, I would say it's the Associated Press. Because they distributed their stories worldwide and they're highly respected. So that was going to be a key story. And this guy was like really interested in this. And he asked me for the documents and I sent him the documents and correspondence and stuff, which at that time practically nobody had. And they were going to run with the story. And then the story didn't run and I called up and they, you know, the story was clearly killed. There's no question about it. That story was killed.
Yeah, and you can.
I think, by the way, ironically, I think that at least the my recollection on this is that that Rockefeller himself didn't want it out in such a public way, and the impression I had was that Rockefeller's office had killed the story.
It could be. He was under a lot of pressure. He did state to Stephen Greer that he was under a lot of pressure from the Rockefeller family to get out of this thing, that he really, his hands were tied. But the killing of the story, you can look at the most recent story, this Chase Brannon story, where you got a guy with 40 years experience in the CIA, a high-ranking person inside the CIA. He steps forward and clearly says in front of millions of people on coast to coast that Roswell was real and there was bodies, and he's seen the evidence. And nobody picked up on that story either. It just absolutely, nobody would touch it.
Let's talk a bit about President Nixon. And the reason I say Nixon is that Nixon may have actually known about an extraordinary case that happened at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, where a flying saucer allegedly landed and was filmed by the United States Air Force with three beings coming out of that craft, and one of them, the lead being actually meeting with base commander and other people from the base, and even going into a private room nearby to discuss who knows what. But the question is, do you think that this was actually a landing, which would have been the most amazing, extraordinary event in the history of the planet, or do you think that it was something that was kind of cooked up as a test to see how the public might react such an event by seeing it on film? Was it a staged event, a real event? Did it ever happen in any way?
I have a source who talked to both President Ford and to President George Bush Sr., and he confirms to me that both of them confirmed it was not a psychological film done for psychological purposes.
I want you to say that once again, please.
I have a source who I talked to this number of years ago who told me that he had talked to both President Ford and to President Bush Sr. about the Holloman film, and it asked them, was this a psychological operation? Was this something that was set up? And both of them confirmed, no, this was not a psychological operation. He asked Ford. Ford had said he got it as part of the presidential briefing. Bush said he hadn't got it as part of the presidential briefing, but he got it as director of the CIA. And both of them seemed to confirm that this was an actual film. It was an actual film that was taken. So I believe it was a film. And then you get into the complexity of how it was brought out. I do believe that Bob Emenegger got a letter. Linda Howe told me that she saw the letter, that Bob showed it to her and another researcher in Los Angeles back about 20 years ago, and it was a direct letter from Richard Nixon to Bob Emenegger, Bob Emenegger is the one that released the idea that this film had been taken in a documentary in the mid-1970s called UFOs, Past, and Future, and Linda told me that... Pardon me?
Yeah, I was saying, what exactly did that letter say?
Linda said that the letter said, it was from Nixon to Bob Emenegger, and it said, thank you for your cooperation on the project that we worked on. And I've known Linda for a number of years, and she, as far as I'm concerned, has a photographic memory. And I was in a room at Ozark, at the Ozark Conference in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, where we were having dinner with Bob, and she confronted Bob and said, Bob, why don't you come clean? You know you still showed me the letter, you know, and she related what was in the letter, and Bob didn't say anything. He just looked at her. So I do believe there was a letter from Nixon, and you got to also remember that Bob Emenegger had gone to school. He was at UCLA with Bob Haldeman, who was Nixon's chief of staff, and he also was in daily communication with a guy, German name escapes me, but he was Nixon's communication guy inside the White House. And Bob Emenegger told me that during the production of that documentary that involved the Holloman film, that he was in almost daily communication with this fellow who he had been in the Air Force with, who was communication director for Nixon. So, yes, I do believe Nixon knew and that Nixon approved the program, and this was an idea to get it out. Because what you got to remember is 1969, the U.S. Air Force got out of UFOs. They never had to talk about UFOs again if they didn't want to. And so the question is, why in 1973, 4 years later, would they suddenly come to Bob Emenegger and Alan Sandler, who were producers, and say, we want you to do this documentary on UFOs? I mean, if there's nothing to it, why are you going out and getting producers to make documentaries on UFOs?
Now, Grant, here's the problem that I have with that film, and I've been, like, extremely interested in that case and continue to be extremely interested in that case. But I found something that nobody else has found, and that is this. As you know, the film was withdrawn. Whatever that film was, whether real or not real, was withdrawn by the Air Force and not allowed to be included in Bob Ebenezer's film documentary. And Bob Ebenezer put out a book in which what was the title of that book, by the way? It was
the same UFOs, past, present, and future. It was the same name, yeah, as the film.
Okay, here's a description of this incident, and in there he also has in the book a number of drawings, and these drawings show. This alleged landing and what the beings look like, and the beings aren't human looking, but they're a bit different. They have a very long, very large, pronounced, kind of hooked noses and a weak chin and large ears. And what I found, because I had seen it in the book and I remembered it and I tracked it. By comparing the drawing in Bob's book, Bob Ebenezer's book, which presumably just the drawing had to be based on the description, I found that that wasn't real to this extent. That is, it's as if you took a tracing of photographs of a number of statues that exist in a museum, I believe it in Germany. I have copies of these photographs, by the way. And they were pictures of Sumerians. Now, for those of us who believe, as I do, that the Anunnaki from Planet X came down here and jump-started the human race, the beings that are shown are not Anunnaki, but rather they're Sumerian. And so something doesn't jibe here. Now, when Ebenezer has been asked this a number of times now, and Ebenezer, with all due respect, could be a little on the slippery side. He kind of avoided it, and he finally said that there was some, I believe, a Brazilian artist, and he gave us his name, and we weren't able to quite connect with him. But that was, you know, what he did, that is the drawing that he came up with. But certainly the drawing had to be, the whole idea of it was that it had to be based on a description. And Paul Chartle, who's no longer with us, but Paul Chartle, who was in charge of the audiovisual department at one of the Air Force bases, had gone on a television show all the way back many years ago and had talked about it and specifically mentioned that there was a communications device and also that there were that these beings had very large noses. I remember, like it was yesterday, him emphasizing they had very large noses. Well, the Sumerians happened to have very large noses, but the drawing isn't sort of Sumerian. It's an exact tracing, I mean 100% tracing of a statue that's in a museum in Germany today. The communications device, whatever it might have been, is sort of like a caduceus. That is, people will remember, you know, people, if you think of the medical symbol that we're all familiar with, which is a winged symbol with double snakes wound around it. That's what that communication device shown in that drawing is, but I found the source for that too, and that exact image is on a vase, an ancient Sumerian vase. So the picture in the book could not have possibly been a depiction, a real depiction of a real event, or at least not, you know, if something happened, and I have my own thoughts about it, but Ebenezer really has a lot of explaining to do, and he's you know, avoided being pinned down on this subject, but it's really important. If Haldeman and possibly Nixon knew about this, this would be, the evidence that we've been waiting for of a of interaction between extraterrestrials and humans.
Okay, I based upon what happened with Chase Brannon, I don't have an explanation. So let me give you my explanation of what I think happened. This latest story, Chase Brannon is the CIA guy, 40 years CIA, goes on coast to coast, 15 million people, whatever, and he basically tells a story that he's in Langley headquarters in the historic intelligence collection. He sees this Roswell box, and he pulls the Roswell box down, and inside the Roswell box, he sees this material. He says, I can talk about the Roswell box. There's no problem there, but I can't, under any circumstances, talk to you about what was inside the box. So the box doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. He just made up the box. He saw it someplace else. The idea of what was in the box, for example, if there's a photo, he said there's photos. So if there's a photo of an alien, if he describes the alien in the photo that's classified material, he breaks the law. Nobody's going to break the law. You can't release classified material. So here's what happened, in Yemenegger story, and I confirmed this with Bob tonight. I wrote him. I said, Bob, you told me the film was not classified. And he said, yes, the film was never classified. And all they did is tell him, this is how you describe it, an event that might happen in the future or an event that might have happened in the past. During that film, there's two things that happened. But the film was pulled back, but Bob confirmed it to me, and he's confirmed it in radio interviews, that 8 seconds of the film was given back to them and put into the film. So I pressed him for a number of years. I said, Bob, this 8 seconds of film, why would they give you 8 seconds of film? If they pulled the film back, why would they give you the 8 seconds of film? And after Brannon talked about the fact that he couldn't talk about what was in the box, it suddenly occurred to me. He said, they gave it to us because it didn't show anything. It didn't show the craft, and it didn't show the aliens. So it's not classified material. All it is in the film, you can see this little light coming over the horizon as it's coming down. Once it gets to an actual object, then that's classified. What the object looks like is classified. What the alien looks like is classified. And if you remember, because you and I have dealt with this story, and I agree with you, it is almost an exact tracing of the Sumerian that it was taken. Bob Emmeniger, and I was at his house, and I talked to his wife and him about this. They confirmed to me Bob was not in the room when this happened. The only people that were in the room were Celso, who was the artist, this storyboard artist for Bob Emmeniger. Celso drew it based upon what Paul Schardel described. Paul Schardel is the military guy. He was the security guy at Norton Air Force Base in charge of all the film, the military film from all the different agencies.
Well, so are you saying that the artist saw the film?
No. The only person that was confirmed to have seen the film was Schardel. And all Schardel did was describe it to Celso, the artist, and Celso just drew Paul Schardel was showing him. So Celso doesn't know what's going on. I mean, so I'm saying the alien is classified. What the alien looked like was classified. Schardel couldn't tell him what the alien looks like, so he just has this stupid Sumerian thing that he may have seen the same statue you saw, and all he does is describe this alien to him, and Celso draws the alien, and he gives it to Bob, and Bob confirmed to me, and his wife said the same thing. They said, like, they were shocked when they saw this alien, and his wife is very much into UFOs. She says, this is a Sumerian. It was quite obvious it was a Sumerian. And so the fact is that they did that because it was classified, the same as the object in the film. All they show is the object where you can't see the actual object. The actual object is classified. So it's the old deal is you release the material, but you have to withdraw the classified material. The same as now this Chase Brannon has brought out this book, which supposedly describes the alien, the crash at Roswell and the cover up of that crash. And he says, it was reviewed by the CIA 2 or 3 times. They had a bunch of stuff they wanted to take it out. They want a bunch of stuff changed. He put the book out, and he said, when you read the book, read between the lines. All you're doing is fictionalizing an account. You're telling the account, but you fictionalize it because you can't release classified material. They'll throw you in jail.
Yeah.
So they're fictionalizing. That's why they changed the alien. That's my impression.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Doomsday Live. We're here every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Pacific Time, 12 midnight Eastern Time, on BBS radio station number 2, and the number to call, toll-free number, if you have any questions, is 929-5741. My guest is Grant Cameron, the presidential UFO historian, and we're talking about involvement by potential involvement by President Nixon, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and extraterrestrials or UFOs. Okay, before we continue, I also want to mention that I highly recommend a very important website for anyone who's interested in the Mayan end day on the calendar, December 21st, 2012, and what that may all mean. The website is December21, 2012.com. That's December 21, 2012. That's a website that's run by John Kane, who does a splendid job. He's assembled the best available information, and he takes the end time subject from all points of view, culturally, historically, and he very much keeps up with news media accounts of the 2012 movement. Grant, are there any other presidents that come to mind? Is there anything about that? There's a story that's been told that I have a hard time with, where supposedly President Eisenhower had a similar type of communication, but more directly at an Air Force base. Could you tell us about that, and do you believe it's true?
Well, I researched the story. I went to the Eisenhower Library, and I spent about a week researching the story, and Bill Moore went through the same paper trail as I did. He went to the library, and I think we both came up to the same conclusion that basically what happened, this is February of 1954, Eisenhower goes to Palm Springs for vacation. He's supposed to be playing bridge with some friends of his there, whatever, and on the one night, I believe it was a Saturday night, he disappears. There's absolutely no doubt that he disappears. The press all picks up on this. There's a New York reporter who's about to go on the wire with the story that the president has died of a heart attack. They race the press secretary back from a barbecue on the other side of town. He sort of gets a news conference, and he talks to them, and he said, no, the president isn't dead. He's had an accident chewing chicken or whatever it was, broke a tooth, and he doesn't reappear till next morning at church. Bill Moore, who went and did the research and actually talked to the wife of this dentist who supposedly was involved in putting this cap back on the president's tooth, and she said absolutely not. She said if her husband had worked on the president, she would have known about it. So the whole thing was that the president just disappeared. It was very mysterious, and the idea about him meeting with these aliens and having these aliens talk about the nuclear weapons, you've got to stop all this kind of stuff. That whole scenario comes from a UFO group that put out material about 2 weeks after the event. So it was very, very fresh material, and they claimed to have three high-ranking people who had told them the story. So that's where the story comes from. Like anything else in ufology or any, you know, these kind of things, very hard to prove. I went there, spent a whole week on the story. All I could confirm is, yes, the president did disappear. As to whether he went to Edwards Air Force Base, it's almost impossible to prove.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in learning more about any of the presidents, and virtually all of the modern-day presidents are listed, included, and featured on Grant Cameron's website, it's president. Go to presidentialufo.com. You'll find all of these accounts and more. Grant does a terrific job of tracking this information down. It doesn't just take press releases, but he actually goes in search of the truth concerning all of this. Grant, I understand that there was one incident that occurred that involved you where you were coming into the United States. You're a citizen of Canada, and you came into the United States, I believe, for a lecture on the subject of UFOs and presidents of the United States, and you had some problems at the airport. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was going to Los Angeles to lecture, and the lecture I was giving is the 64 reasons the government has decided not to tell you what the truth is, or to withhold the truth. I flew from Winnipeg, where I am, onto the west coast to Vancouver. I was crossing over Vancouver to get on the LA plane, and Homeland Security basically said I was in violation. I didn't have a work visa to work in the United States, and I said, well, you know, it's a simple $150 honorarium. Professors go across all the time to give a single lecture. They don't need visas. And they said, you're not a professor. Don't go there. And then he refused me entry to the United States. And I said, well, you know, I've never had any trouble going across before. And that was when he made this very cryptic statement. Well, we'll make sure that doesn't happen again. And basically handed me a piece of paper that said I'd been refused entry to the United States. I said, well, what do I do now? He said, I don't care what you do, go back where you came from. And that was the end of it. I got back on the plane, flew back home again, and for a period of 2 years, I was warned, somebody gave me a warning that it would go on for 2 years, and it did. For 2 years, every time I went to the border, I would be pulled, I'd be sitting in a little room with the one-way glass and all that kind of stuff. And then it seemed to stop. So I still lecture in the United States, but I don't accept honorariums. I just go, I have enough money, I don't need that. So I just go and lecture in the United States, and I really haven't had any problems of late with that kind of stuff. But yes, I was refused entry to the United States.
So you do think this was something political, or is it just personal on the part of whoever it was in stock?
No, I think it was just, you know, after 9/11, the security has increased tenfold. And I think the guy, it was just, I happened to hit the wrong guy on the wrong day. And so I don't think it really had any, at that time I did, because I actually went back through I tell the story, I go back through the airport, and I'm trying to get back on the Air Canada plane going back home, and I got pulled a second time for my computer, explosives on my computer. And what had happened was I sent my computer about 3 days before the lecture. I'd sent it to get a new hard drive by FedEx, and it come back from Dell Computers, and I guess they'd use some sort of solvent to clean the keyboard or whatever, and this was picked up by the screener. So I was pulled twice within half an hour, and I had the 20 questions, when did you touch explosives, and I was pulled out of lineup and pulled for a second time after I was refused entry. That was back on the Canadian side. So at that point, I figured, like, this has got to be a setup. You can't get pulled twice in 1 day and yeah, you know, be read the riot act. But now I think it was just more of a thing over a work visa. So I've made my way to solve it, and I haven't had any trouble since.
Okay, Grant, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Radio Doomsday Live. The show is on every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time, 12 midnight Eastern time on BBS radio station number 2. And again, thanks, Grant. You shed quite a bit of light about some of these issues that have been on my mind really for quite some time. I appreciate your comments, particularly about the Holloman Air Force Base landing. Still not sure whether that landing happened or didn't happen, but that letter that you refer to that Linda Howe apparently saw with President Nixon's signature on it sounds pretty good to me under the circumstances, even though Nixon only refers to thanking Bob Emanator for participation in a program. The timing is rather impeccable and would certainly suggest, in view of everything else that we know went on, that the Nixon White House had quite a bit of involvement with potentially a contact between an extraterrestrial beings and humanity. Thanks again, and Grant Cameron's website is presidentialufo.com. Go there if you can as soon as possible, and you'll find out some amazing things about the presidents of the United States and UFOs. Radio Doomsday Live is on, as I said, every Thursday night. The toll-free number is 1-888-429-5741. Remember that cruise that I spoke of is being taking place in late late December or right ahead of the end date on the Mayan calendar. It's a cruise that's going to be leaving Fort Lauderdale and then going to Mexico. There will be lots of action. And then returning back to Fort Lauderdale, and aboard that cruise will be Jane Dougherty, the well-known psychic, as well as a gentleman who's a well-known Mexican muralist who has in his possession nine crystal skulls, ancient crystal skulls. And as I've mentioned before, I was at an extraordinary event last year called The Legend of the 13 Crystal Skulls, where four Mayan elders led the event. And after the event, the most unbelievable thing happened. In the weeks following the event, four of those skulls, and perhaps more than four, we only know of four, changed color from a milky white to clear on their left side. Now, what's that all about? I don't know, but the whole idea of the Mayan legend, I'm told, is that at a time, an unusual time where humanity stood at the crossroads, 13 crystal skulls would be brought together from all over the world, and these skulls were brought together from all over the world, and they would kind of point the way for mankind. There you have it. I want to thank you for listening to Radio Doomsday Live. Tune in next time, if there is a next time.